So it's good to be back. What I would love to do before we sink in, because now we're in the book of Exodus. So we are walking for 40 weeks plus through the book of Exodus and all that unfolds there. So we will turn the page and jump into that. But before we do that, one of the things that was so precious and good about being in Turkey is being able to just be with one another, sit with one another, look one another in the eyes, share our stories, take care of one another, love one another, pray for one another, cry with one another, laugh with one another, and be in very rich community together. And so when we come home, we don't want to stop doing that for one another. And this Wednesday, our friend Kathy Curtis has a procedure that will be done, so we want to bring her up and just be able to pray for her before you head into that, because we always want the grace and peace and healing of Christ to take place as she steps into those moments. So, Kathy, if you would, I'd love to just have you come up so we can pray for you before you step into that on Wednesday. So she's going to have some things dug out of her arm that were cancerous, so we just got to get that out of there.
Yeah.
Your shoulder, right? Just get that out. Get that out. Melanoma.
Everybody go to the dermatologist.
Everyone go to the dermatologist. Yep, 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 yep. There you go. So let's just take a moment and pray, if we can, for Kathy. That would be good. Gracious God, here is your daughter, beloved and loved by us. And so, God, as she bends toward Wednesday, we pray and trust that you have equipped the doctors, the nurses, the physicians, the care people to do what they do really, really, really well. You have given them gifts and talents and skills and passion for that. And so we trust that you will lead and guide that. We pray grace and peace for Kathy in the midst of that, for Rex, for their family. As you do, you will be holding them. May they experience your love, your compassion, and you being with them and you being with Kathy in the midst of that. And God, we pray that this gets out and that a clean bill of health is on the other side. And we will bless you and praise you for that. And we pray this in the name of Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Lord.
Yes. Okay. So we are going to this morning turn the page, but 4 weeks in, and we're already to chapter 3 of Exodus. So we're going to be moving in that direction, but we can't just go right there. That would be silly. We need to first, I think, we have to back up and we need to listen and feel the last couple verses of chapter 2 so that we can experience the ache, which inaugurates a cry, and the cry that ignites God's call for peace for these people who are enslaved in Egypt. And so it's never enough to just open the Bible and read it, because when we open the scriptures, it is a cross-cultural experience. So when we do that, it would be best as if we can do our best to sink into it, to be in the text, to be in the story, to experience what these people are experiencing. So we want to do that. So we'll be in Exodus chapter 2, verse 23 to 25. It goes like this. During that long period, and this is the period in which Moses has now drifted, he's wandering, he's taken off to Midian, and he's become a shepherd of sheep there. And so there's a long period of time, the king of Egypt, or the Pharaoh, who was out to kill Moses, dies. So during this long period, don't know how long, the Israelites, though in the meantime, groaned in their slavery and cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their moaning and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Yaakov. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Now, we first start with the fact that there are four terms that give voice to the Hebrew people's suffering. They groaned, they cried out, they cry, and they moaned. So we have very descriptive things of an experience that they're in, and we have four verbs that express God's response to that. God heard, God remembered, God looked on, and God was concerned. He sees it all, he sees them, he hears them, he feels them, and he does something about it. This tells us what we're talking about when we talk about God. Okay? So secondly, as we sink into this, context, context, context. It was an established practice in the ancient Egyptian world for a new king to celebrate his accession to the throne by granting, so this is what would happen when a new king comes on, they would normally grant amnesty to those guilty of crimes by releasing prisoners and freeing slaves. So contextually, these Hebrew slaves, the Israelites, would be clinging to a sliver of hope that this would be true of them. Might we get let loose? May we be set free because a new king is on the throne? But it's not. Which is devastating and demoralizing. So they groan and cry out in their despair, their pain, and their suffering. But it says, but God remembers. Now, here's the thing. The Hebrew understanding of remembering, the word is zechor, in Hebrew zechor, it holds a very particular meaning. It's not merely recalling things of the past. It means rather to be mindful, to pay heed, signifying a sharp focusing of attention upon someone or something. It embraces concern and involvement and is active, big deal, not passive, so that it eventuates action. Now, the rabbis comment in the Talmud that looking upon leads to remembering. And remembering leads to action. So they're not recalling. So when it says God remembered, it's not this, oh, a memory. It's this is what we have to do in light of what was. Are you with me? So this is about acting in the present based on what one has learned from the past. So biblical wisdom says, do not forget your history. Otherwise, if, or better, when it tries to repeat itself, you have the soul force to act in fresh new ways. Because when it comes back again, that you go, ah, I think not. And I think I will act differently because I know this thing is going to come around again. And I expect it, I see it, I know it. And when I do so, I will act in fresh ways that are rooted in compassion and grace and healing and forgiveness. And so now I've got that built into me. And so we're going to act now based on what was a new way, a fresh way. Are you with me? So then, the text is informing us that God is acting on behalf of the Hebrew people because that is who God is. The God of compassion plus action, which is where we get the word mercy. Mercy is compassion plus action. So it's not just, aw, they fell down. It's, aw, they fell down and I'm going to get over there and help pick them up. That's called mercy. And that is what this God does. And that is a giddy up. So then, now we can, with that, properly step into chapter 3 as we continue our adventure through the book of Exodus. So, chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. These six verses are some of the best six verses in the entire biblical narrative. I love it. Now, Moshe was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush, as happens. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I think I'll go over and take a peek at this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, "Here I am." "Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." Then he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And this, Moses, at this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Ooh-wee. No. We're going to take this in some bite-sized pieces. Moses leads the flock to the far side of the wilderness. From, if you're in Midian and you lead to the far side of the wilderness, you're actually heading in the direction of Egypt. So he's heading back that way. The word wilderness in the Hebrew is the word Midbar. Go ahead and say Midbar. Midbar, it's uninhabited and unirrigated pasture land. It's desert. Now it says wilderness, but it's desert. That's what it is. Midbar is a dry and arid area with less than 200 millimeters of rain per year and scarce vegetation but diverse animal species. This land is understood to be just enough. It's the land of just enough. So then, Midbar, and this is always shocking for people, is the place of the promised land. It's a land of just enough that will be promised to them. But to better get our minds around the depth of this, the Hebrew root word for Midbar is Davar. Go ahead and say Davar. Davar is the root word, and it means to speak. To speak. So then, to speak. This is fascinating. This is where the Hebrew language is loaded with all sorts of depth and meaning, because the idea all throughout the biblical narrative is God speaks to people in the desert, in the Midbar. Now, Midbar is uninhabited, and it's just enough. There is another kind of desert, and if you go to Israel, you can experience this as well. There's another kind of desert called Yeshimon. Go ahead and say Yeshimon. Yeshimon is a dry and desolate place which is not sustainable for life. It's the, no, you can't stay here. No, you can't survive here. So Yeshimon is a different kind. So God speaks in the Midbar, and this is really important because it's, listen, we get this. When we are in the place of just enough, it's a place of nothing more than ready daily bread, we learn to rely on, to trust the faithfulness of the divine. The most likely place to get someone's attention is Midbar. If you wanted to speak to someone and be sure that they were giving you their full attention, the Midbar is where you give the Davar. That's how you remember it. Midbar is where we get the Davar. God speaks in the Midbar. Because when we are in Yeshimon, when our desperation, when we're desperate, right? Yeshimon is, oh my goodness, I can't live here. I'm desperate. When we are in that kind of place, it usually plugs the ears of our heart. But when we are in more than enough, we often ignore or lose the voice of the divine in the midst of all of the other noise that around us, because there's just so much. So we don't hear when there's too much, and we often don't hear when there's not enough, but when there's just enough, we're dialed in to hear from God. Because we rely on trust. Oh, it's enough, but I've got to have some interdependence on God in order to take that next right step forward. Are you with me? Now then, that leads to a brilliant idea for prayer, which could be offered and make a great tradition. It's called, "Give us this day our daily bread." How about that? What does Jesus teach people to pray? God, give me so much that I have it just overflowing and I'm just drenched in it. And no. hey, God, just strip it all bare so I'm standing here just thinking, how am I going to make? No. God, if I might have that next meal, and that's it. I'm not asking to not be able to see the back of my cabinets. I'm asking for this plate right here to have just enough for right now. Jesus says that's what we should pray, because then we have a level of listening to Spirit. Of course. Because that is that reliance that we need in our lives. God is with us. Which is why when I'm asked, what is your favorite part about Israel? So when I went to Israel, what's your favorite part about Israel? And my answer is the desert. No, not Jerusalem, not Galilee. Love those places. Great. Love to walk it. Desert. Why? Because it's the place of just enough. And it's where we tend to have ears to hear the voice of God speaking to us. I love the desert. Now, as a fun aside, so we'll have a little fun, scholars continue to debate whether Mount Horeb and Mount Sinai are the same location, with the majority of scholars saying that it is the same location. So traditionally, the presumed site for the burning bush, they have like, okay, so if it's based at this mountain, the presumed site is this place today. This is called St. Catherine's Monastery. So, of course, if this is where the burning bush was, then we should build a monastery to honor it. That's apparently what we do. There was a burning bush here, so let's build stuff. So that we can remember the place, be in the place. Next slide gives us another picture of zoomed out, sits at the base, or zoomed in, base of Mount Sinai, Mount Horeb. Here is this place in which we're going to set up a monastery. Because if there was a burning bush, they go, well, then we should put a monastery because we want to be constantly sitting in the burning bush. That's the thought. Understandable. It's a good time. It's interesting. It's insightful. How we often build things in honor of hearing from the divine, but I think we would do well to sit with the fact that in the Midbar, God speaks. Because it is in the Midbar in which God speaks, which is true of the great Hebrew prophet Elijah. He will run to the desert to hear the small voice of God. And Jesus often retreats to the wilderness, ready? Midbar is actually the word when it says Jesus retreats, in order to commune with his Father. He has this encounter with Jesus on the road to Damascus. What he does then is he goes into the desert and goes to Sinai, and literally for 3 years, he goes to Sinai to listen to the voice of God as he goes, what just happened? Because everything I've known just got flipped upside down. So he goes for 3 years and goes to this place to listen. To listen. So what is being communicated in this burning bush? We ask, like, what's going on then? What is being said? Now, there is a midrash, which is rabbinic commentary, that says the two elements of the spectacle in this scene suggest two levels of interpretation. We have the self-sustaining fire, requiring no substance for its existence, which the rabbis say, well, this is a clear representation of divine presence, the fire, right? Then the bush that remains intact in the face of the flames, ready, is symbolic of the people of Israel surviving Egyptian oppression. Come on. So what Moses is alerted to is there is the divine and there is this people who just keep hanging on in the face of slavery. Moses, I need you to step into this scene and do something. It's brilliant. It's beautiful. So Moses then, how does he interact with this scene, with this, as it says, strange sight? So the text says this, verse 4. When the Lord saw, I love this so much, when the Lord saw, think of all how experiential this is. God sees that Moses is acting. He goes over to look at the bush, and then God calls to him when he recognizes, I see you interacting with this thing in a very different way. Now, what's fascinating is the kind of bush that is understood here. when we were in Israel, like our Israeli guide goes, yeah, I know, that's very common. That kind of bush is really common in the desert. And so, yeah, what happens is when it's tumbling along or when things are moving in the desert being blown, there's a spark and these bushes light on fire all the time. So it's not unlikely. Moses isn't going, well, I can't, something caught on fire. He'd go, oh, here we go again. But what's different is Moses pays attention. Moses stops and looks and says, I want to go over and look and see what is happening. Rather than, oh, there's another bush on fire. Come on. Come on, little goatee. Come over here and drink. Come over and drink. I know it's on fire. Who cares? No. Let's go stare at this thing. And then God speaks and says, Moses, says Charlton Heston. Well, he played Moses, but anyways. And Moses said, here I am. Now, we begin with the fact that there are seven instances in the sweep of the entire biblical narrative in which God uses someone's name twice. There's a reason. There are four in the Hebrew Scriptures, or what people often refer to as the Old Testament. We get Abraham. We get Jacob, and here with Moses, then we'll get the prophet Samuel, in which his mentor even says to him, because he runs to his mentor and he's like, what's going on? I hear my name. And he says, well, here's what you do. Stop running to me and telling me that because you're waking me up. And he's like, when that happens, respond with, here I am. That's what he's instructed. Respond with, here I am, so you're actually paying attention. And then we move to the New Testament, and in the New Testament we have Martha. Then we have Simon, that is Peter. And then Saul, or Paul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Ready? The rabbis say the first utterance of the name signifies the current or former life, and the second calling is for a new identity, or a new calling, or a new life. Moses, you've been doing this. Moses, you will be doing this. If you listen, if you pay attention, if you follow me, I've got a new work for you to do. Are you with me? And in all of these instances, these people's lives change. Their lives all change in all seven of these encounters in which God calls them twice. They're going to have a shift in their calling. And what they are doing or who they are being gets moved, which is true here for Moses, as this experience is going to summon him into a more expansive vocation. Because he's been a shepherd for 40 years. He has been chasing little billy goat around. Now, he is being called to shepherd a people out of slavery. So what he learned doing that will be really helpful, but now I have something new for you, Moses. You've been ready, faithful in the little things. Now get ready, because I got a big task for you ahead. And that's what we're getting on. So you are going to lead these people out of slavery, out of the global military superpower that is Egypt. You're going to do this, Moses. But ready? I love this. To get there, you first have to be here. How many times do I hear, oh, I can't wait till I'm 18. Ooh, I can't wait till I'm 21. I can't wait till I'm 25. Ooh, I can't wait till I hit 30. Oh, I can't wait until I go back to 25. Right. All of a sudden, this is like, wait, what just happened? But it's like all this sprint to get to the next thing. And the question is, will you please be present in this thing? Don't miss this, because you only get one of this. Which is why the brilliant response of Moses is, here I am. It's a loaded Hebrew word called hineni. Go ahead and say hineni. Hineni means to be fully present, to be alert. It's an unhesitating response to a call. Hineni is powerful in the Hebrew language. Hineni to these people is loaded because it's not small. It is this, I am standing here, feet fully on the ground. I'm paying attention. Here I am. God, you have my full attention. I'm not distracted. My head is not somewhere else. My heart is not somewhere else. I'm right here, right now. What do you then have? It's just powerful. And I would argue that it is very powerful and desperately needed for today in a world that is drowning in distraction. Correct? We need Hineni more than ever. So I enjoy reading, and I was reading this author who also writes articles for different papers. She writes about women's issues. She writes about media, and she writes about politics, and she's just this wonderful person. And so I was reading several months ago one of the things she was writing, and it just, I literally went, oof. It leveled me, and I grabbed it, and I said, I will set that aside to when we get to Moses and the burning bush in several months from now, because that is it right there. She says this, I'm watching stuff all the time, but very little of it leaves a mark. It's all passive time spent with screens, ingesting information. It requires little of me intellectually, emotionally, spiritually. Just because something uses up my attention doesn't mean I'm actually paying attention to it. Ooh. And she was talking about media in this instance. And she says, I see so much, but nothing is etched on my soul. It's just more information. It is like this pinwheel of death that is constantly spinning, and I'm not getting anything. And I was like, come on, preach it. Now, Father Ronald Rollheiser has described our culture as a people of, he says, we are a society that is distracting ourselves into spiritual oblivion. Oof. I wonder if our lives are so full, so scheduled to the minute, that we function far more robotically than we do humanly. Because when we actually, when someone says, what's on, like, what's your day look like? And you go, let me tell you. At 8 a.m., I don't know. And then 9 a.m., I do this. And then 10 a.m., I go here. And then at noon, I do this. And then, whoa, 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 whoa. And what happens if someone says hi in the midst of that? Hi, hi, I'm sorry. My calendar says I have to be over here. So goodbye. And it's like, what? Hey, huh? And you're like, oh, no. And it's like, so, but it gets to that. How many times we're walking, and I have this, hi, how are you? I'm fine, how are you? Are you fine? Or did you just, literally, that's a knee-jerk reaction. I'm fine, how are you? Are you fine? Now, I get it. We're not going to stop at every single person that says, hi, how are you? And you go, well, let me sit down and tell you. I get that we don't do that with everyone, but I wonder if we do that with anyone. I wonder if we do take time to say, I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to share with you that right now isn't very good. I have this thing sitting, and it is real. So I'm not going to put on the dentine smile, because it doesn't exist right now. And I'm going to actually be fully present right here, and you asked, and guess what? You're getting it. And then if they're like, oh, I was just being polite. Well, I would ask you to slow down and don't just be polite, but actually pay attention. We're just going to really undo things today. I wonder if we would do that. That would be really, really helpful. Certainly one of my favorite things about the Turkey trip was consistently asking questions and inviting reflection for how everyone was engaging, sitting with, processing what we were doing and seeing. We built into the trip. We would do teaching after teaching. I would teach, and then we would stop, and I would go, what are you experiencing right now? What questions do you have? What's spinning with inside you? How are you doing? And oh, by the way, we're not rushing off. We don't, oh, you get a minute because we got to get going. We don't. We'll get to everything we need to get to, How are you doing? How is this hitting you? How is this sitting with you? And we would take the time to pay attention. People were sharing their stories all the time on this trip. Over meals, as we hiked, on the bus, in response to teachings, it felt like heaven and earth had melted together. Because there wasn't some other place at some other time. There's right here, right now, and this is how I'm doing. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm in the midst of. How are you? And there was stopping and praying for and hugging and laughing so much about that and this. And we were here together in eye contact and hugs and high fives. Father Richard Rohr, Franciscan Father Richard Rohr, says this: we cannot attain the presence of God because we're already totally in the presence of God. What's absent is awareness. I think that is so important in this story. Here's the thing. It's a pagan notion that certain areas are inherently holy, and it doesn't exist in the Bible. It is solely the theophany, that is the presence of the divine, that temporarily imparts holiness to a site. It's not that this place is holy and this is not. No. It's an actual paying attention, encountering the living God and going, whoa. It's not that this bush is holy. It's that I'm paying attention that the bush is on fire. So then, here's what I love. Priests officiated in the sanctuary back then, because, it goes here. When God says interacting with the bush, he says, hey, Moses, stop. So next slide, he goes into, stop what you're doing. Oh, sorry, that one, we'll back up then. Okay, so we have, do not come any closer. God says, do not come any closer. God said, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Didn't just become holy ground. It has always been holy because everything is holy. The question is, will you pay attention and be aware of it? So he has this thing so that, will you pay attention? It is holy ground. So here's the thing. Priests back then officiated barefoot in the sanctuary. And to this day, they remove their footwear before pronouncing the priestly benediction. Oh, time for a benediction? Shoes off. Risky business. But they're like, I'm not doing this until there is a bit of a stop and aware in all that we are in right now. What is so stunning and brilliant about this is not that God shows up in a bush that is on fire, rather that Moses is alert. He is fully present to witness this and then witness to the holiness of hearing from the living God. It's really a big deal because our prayer then is not, God, please show up, but rather, God, help me be awake to the fact that you've been here the entire time. Very different prayer, is it not? We talked about this on our trip because it was like, God, please show up for Lucy as she's... No. God's already been with Lucy, holding her, hugging her. The question is, will we be aware of that? And will Lucy be aware of the fact that God is right here, right now with me? I might not feel it in some big flames on fire me, but God is present. So, we don't need to travel overseas to a Midbar desert to experience the voice of the divine, because there are burning bushes all around us all the time. And it's just that we are too often distracted, busy, and multitasking ourselves into exhaustion as human doings that we are bleeding out as human beings. So I'd like to offer my own wake-up, which is also a takeaway from my time in Turkey. Then I'd like to offer one simple practice that I love to participate in. And finally, I'd like to introduce you to one of my favorite people in the world, who is both a meaningful friend and a mental health therapist who provides further depth and grace-filled giddy-up, is helping us be attentive. So, first, a Turkey takeaway. The question of, how am I growing? Because I ask my, how is it that, how do I grow? How am I growing? It extends way beyond what am I intellectually learning. Way beyond that. Because it is deeply shaped in how I am engaging in this one thing at a time focus. How am I growing? I'm paying attention to the one thing in front of me. It's less about learning all the things and more about giving myself to the one thing or person that is in front of me. It was both a gift and it was soul jarring to be about just this. We went and had this trip, and one of my nervousnesses is going into the trip is that I would be exhausted because when I teach, I throw my whole self into it, and I'm going to be teaching all day long, every single day, site after site after site, and there was a part of me going, where do I get that nap? Because I usually like a little nap in there, right? And so literally it was a nervousness, and I just went, and it was always just the sense of, God, you just keep me going. And then on our last day at the last site, and I gave the last teaching and we were in it, and then I got on the bus and we got back to the hotel, and I looked at my wife and I said, whoa, I'm tired. But it was because I just settled into, there's only this, we have this. And to sit with these people and to spend time with these people in just this reshaped me in the best sort of ways, which leads me to think that the unholy trinity of distraction, multitasking, and busyness may very well be Satan's best trick yet. The singular focus of heart and mind helped alert me to how much the priesthood of busyness may be what is discipling our society the most. We have a growing amount of experts on social media, but what is needed is to recapture the art of sharing in deep-seated community, telling our living, breathing stories with honesty, vulnerability, reality. How are you doing? How can I be with you in this? The art of hospitality offered with hugs, handshakes, and high fives that are real and genuine. The church began as a collection of humans who followed the living Christ in a countercultural, non-imperialistic way of grace and generosity. It's still our call today. It's still the call today. So my one practice, it's just simply this. Call it breath prayer. Inhale, and in the inhale is, I am here. Here I am. Here I am. Inhale. I'm here right now. Okay? Here I am. It's just a rhythm of breathing. And I'll take some time in the morning to just go, before the calendar starts playing whack-a-mole with my head, I want to be fully present to the right here and right now. Here I am, God. I am here. I'm not there. I'm not at 10 a.m. I'm at this moment, this place, right here, right now. What do you have? What are you whispering? What are you speaking? How are you moving? I'd like to be with you in this. So it's just a practice of prayer in the morning and any time in which I get that, you know, little pinwheel of death that goes on your computer. We also have that in our souls. And sometimes it'll just start spinning and we get a little defragmented and we're just kind of lost. And it's like, no, I need to just stop and be here in this. Right? Oh, I'm getting a little unhinged, and I need to be grounded. So with that, I would love to introduce to you someone in my life that when I get to spend a little time, grab a coffee, usually we coffee or beer, we would do that and sit together, and there is something about her that just brings calm to me. Because when I sit with her, she just said, it's just this, we're here, we're right now, how you doing? And her how you doing settles me. So it's brilliant. So I would love to introduce you to Alyssa Bergsma. She's a part of our community. She is a wonderful human being, and she is a mental health therapist. And she is really, I think, wonderful at helping us be fully present to the right here and right now. Thank you, Alyssa. Let me go ahead and grab you the microphone. Thank you. For always willing to have me say, would you come and participate? Because you love, you're like, can I please have a microphone and be in front of lots of people?
It's my favorite thing. My heart is not racing right now, and I'm not sweating. I promise. No, I was really excited when Wally asked me if I would be willing to talk about what it looks like, just as humans, but also in the mental health field, what does it look like to be present? And that's something that I work with every day with clients, but also with myself. And so I was looking through Wally's slides beforehand to kind of figure out what I was going to talk about, what I was going to do. And his slide of, but to get there, one first has to be here, is what stood out to me. I thought to myself, one, isn't that so true, right? In order to be in this next step, whatever that looks like, we have to be present in order to gain clarity, to find comfort and trust in the here and now, to believe that we can do what's next. So, we're going to start out, it's not going to be real long, guys, I promise. So we're going to start out a little bit about what are distractions, right? What distracts us? What keeps us from being present? I want to start out by saying distractions are not always bad, right? If we're anxious, if we're depressed, sometimes distractions are exactly what we need to get our mind off of the things. Not always bad. But when we start to get lost in our distractions and we no longer find ourselves being present, distractions can be problematic. And they're really good at helping us avoid discomfort, emotions, not being present, all of those things. So I'm going to start out by listing 5 different kinds of distractions with some examples under them. While I'm doing that, I kind of want you guys to think about, what distractions do I maybe have? Do any of these hit something for you? I don't know about you guys. I'm distracted all the time. Wally was just talking about a practice called monotasking, of where we're doing one thing. We're being present, right? Like, I can eat dinner, look at my phone, and have the TV on, and I'm not present to any of them. I'm just mindlessly doing whatever, and all of a sudden, time's passed. So, all right, so we're going to start out. We have internal distractions, which are our thoughts, emotions, worries, ruminations, fatigue, stress, hunger, illness, daydreaming. I don't know if any of those hit for you guys. I'm a big daydreamer, so I get that one. We have external distractions, which is like our social media, our technology. It can be video games, busyness. That was a big one talked about today. Busyness is such a big distraction in our lives. It keeps us from being present to our feelings, to maybe processing grief, to being present to our own needs, if that feels really hard to ask for help. It's a great way to keep us distracted. Friends, making plans, that's me. And then noise, right? Music, TV, podcasts, sound, anything to just not be present to yourself in the moment. Then we have unrealistic expectations. So the pursuit of perfection. The promise of tomorrow. Wally kind of talked about that feeling of like, oh, I can't wait till I'm 18. I can't wait till I'm 21, right? But we're not guaranteed that we get to this certain special age and everything feels better and different. In reality, if we haven't taken time to be present to our emotions and our experiences and process those, it's not going to feel a lot different when you get to that age because you haven't worked on anything, right? And so it doesn't always look the way that we hope it does. The regret of yesterday, right? Man, shoulda, coulda, woulda, all of those feelings, again, they distract us from being present. Then we have excessive possessions. Recognizing that things that we own can require a lot of our attention, time, energy, money, and again, it keeps us from being in the here and now. And then finally, being a slave to our schedule, which is also something that Wally talked about. feeling the pressure to do more, even if it doesn't actually fit into our schedule. We live in a very productivity-based society that it constantly expects more, more, more out of us without really ever giving us the time to find the balance between life, work, family, hobbies, all of the things. And so being mindful of some of those things. So how do we begin to challenge these distractions and become more present in our everyday life? This is where I was super excited because this is something that I practice every day. It's some of my favorite things to talk about, and it's called mindfulness. Mindfulness means paying attention to the present moment without judgment or trying to change it. It involves observing our thoughts, feelings, and sensations without getting caught up in them. So there's kind of two key components here, right? There's awareness. We notice our thoughts, feelings, anything that's going on. We don't try to stop thinking about it. It's okay to be aware of it without trying to change it. And then we have acceptance. Noticing what we're feeling without the judgment piece, right? So if I'm feeling anxious, I don't have to act like I'm not, because I am. And so it's the acceptance. It's just naming it. I feel a little anxious right now. Talking in front of people makes my heart race. And so that's part of it. Scientifically, we've done a lot of research around mindfulness, and some of the benefits of practicing mindfulness is it decreases depression and anxiety. It improves our memory and focus, which is awesome. It improves our resilience to stressful situations. We have greater satisfaction in our relationships, less overthinking or obsessing, improved ability to manage emotions, and increased ability to be present. So, with that, I'm going to give you guys my four favorite tools of mindfulness. These are ones that I give to my clients. It's ones that I practice every single day. I find them to be really simple, tangible things that we can do in our everyday lives. So I hope one of them lands with you. I don't expect all four of them to, but maybe one of them feels like, oh, that's easy to practice. I can try that. So first one is we're going to start with the five senses activity. The goal of this is to bring, obviously, our thoughts into the present moment. To practice this, you choose any activity where you notice your mind constantly wandering. For me, it's the dishes. I think about everything while I'm doing the dishes because it's mindless. I don't know. So it could be your drive home, chores around the house. It could be during exercise. It could be just about anything. So I'm going to kind of paint this picture for you, right? I want you to picture this. We're going to go through our five senses, and we're going to talk about how to feel this. So we're going to picture ourselves taking a walk. Okay, we're going to do exercise. So our sight, right? All of a sudden, you're taking this walk. You head out. You see how blue the sky is. We notice the color of the sky. Right now is a perfect time to practice this with the changing leaves, right? We see all of the colors all around us. Maybe we see empty or busy streets. We notice maybe the flowers, anything like that. You notice the leaves. So we're looking, right? We're picturing all of these things around us. Then we go to sound, right? We're listening. You can hear the leaves blowing in the wind. Maybe you hear a car passing by. Maybe you hear a dog barking. Maybe you hear like a creek or a stream type of thing. We can hear all of these things. Then we move to feel and touch. You feel that the sun is warm. Maybe we feel that the air is really cold. You can feel your feet landing on the ground. You can feel the rootedness of that every time you push off the ground. Let's move to taste. Maybe you guys pack coffee or tea for your walks. That feels like a really kind thing to do. So maybe it's a nice cold water. Maybe it's when you're done with your walk, right? But all of a sudden you take a sip. Maybe you are eating a piece of gum. You can just taste this. It also gives us a lot of other things, right? We feel the warmth of the cold. We can smell coffee. Coffee smells great. And so we get that taste sensation, and then we end with smell. Sometimes, I don't know about you guys, but you can smell fall, right? We can smell the leaves. We smell the changing of the seasons. We can smell the spring coming. Maybe you smell wet grass or a campfire, a grill, anything like that. And so that is one tool of just notice the things around you, get in tune with your senses, and all of a sudden you'll notice, oh, I haven't been thinking about anything. All I've been noticing is the here and now and where I am. So our second one is a, I don't actually know what they're called. When they each have a letter and they have a meaning. Acronym. It's an acronym. It's RAIN. So this is another really simple tool to use to help us stay grounded, present in the moment. So RAIN. The R stands for recognize. Let yourself feel at ease in the moment. Slowly take in your surroundings. Recognize your thoughts, feelings, and physical sensations, and name the feelings out loud or silently to yourself. Then we have allow. Observe your experience as if watching a movie, right? Let your thoughts, feelings, and sensations come and go as they are. Let go of any judgment. It's okay to feel however you are feeling. Investigate. What words are going through your mind? What emotions are you feeling? And where are they coming from? How are these feelings experienced in your body, right? Anxiety, sometimes we feel in our chest, sometimes we feel in our stomach. Sadness, sometimes we feel it in different areas in our body, and just notice what your body is trying to tell you. Sense the most vulnerable part of yourself and reflect on what it needs, such as acceptance, forgiveness, love, or belonging. And then finally, we nurture. Be kind toward your experience. Give yourself a comforting message, such as, I love you, you are okay, or anything else you might need to hear. Think of a friend, family member, pet, or spiritual figure, and imagine their love flowing to you. Let that compassion and love sit with you and allow it to be present with you. This next one is called a container exercise. If I'm going too fast, let me know. A container activity or a container exercise. This is another really powerful tool if you guys are open to like visualization. This is a mindfulness technique that helps people manage more of like the racing thoughts, right? If we're finding ourselves ruminating, we're worrying a lot, we can't fall asleep because our brains just won't shut off, this is one of my favorite tools. So we choose a container. Picture it, right? Mine tends to be like those giant Tupperwares that you put Christmas decorations in. That's what I picture. So you can choose whatever container you want. Just make sure that it's big enough to hold whatever you're thinking about. Then we picture ourselves taking that thought, right? Like, oh my gosh, why did I say that thing 5 years ago? That was so embarrassing. And now I can't sleep, right? That happens to me. So then we picture ourselves, we take that thought, we put it into the container, and we take all of our emotions and feelings and we put it into the container with it, right? We picture ourselves shutting that container. We visualize. You hear the click. You know that it's safe. It's shut. It's ready to be put away. Then we picture ourselves putting that container onto a shelf. It's maybe really high up so you don't have to reach it. Don't have to think about it type of thing. You put it in a room that you know you can get back to. And then we come back when we're ready, right? Maybe we get a good night's sleep and we come back to it tomorrow and say, I have the capacity to sit with this today. Well, then just grab your container down, open it up, and take some time to think with, like, to sit with it. But giving ourselves the opportunity to get rid of those internal distractions and let our body feel present to the moment and not slaves to our thoughts can be incredibly empowering and freeing. And then finally, one other tool that I really like, and one that Wally kind of already touched on, is breath work. Using diaphragmatic breathing, which is like that big, your stomach comes out, right? Like the abdominal breathing pushes our belly out and it fills our lungs with air. By using breath work, again, there's a lot of science that goes with it and a lot of really positive impacts it can have on our body, such as it improves our mood. It can release tension and stress. It can reduce anxiety, increase focus, regulate our sleep patterns, slow our heart rate, reduce our blood pressure, and lower cortisol levels, which are all things we need to feel really calm. So box breathing is one of my favorite tools. It's really easy. It's easy to remember. It's all fours. So to practice, we inhale through our nose, right? You get it into that big belly breathing, you count to four in your head, you hold your breath for 4 seconds, you exhale through your mouth for 4 seconds, and then you hold your breath for 4 seconds, and you just do it over and over, maybe 2 or 3 times. This is one of my favorite tools. Again, when I can't fall asleep, I usually get something cold, and then I do my back's breathing, and I fall asleep fairly quickly, which is nice. So those are four really simple tools to try to help yourself be more present in what we consider like a super fast-paced world that loves to distract us and keep us going. And just like anything, whenever we're trying something new, it is so important to have a lot of self-compassion, right? This isn't going to be easy. You guys aren't going to be perfect at it. It takes time and practice just like any habit would. And so a lot of kindness and grace to yourselves. You know, treat yourself like you would treat someone else. We have so much compassion for other people in this world and not always for ourselves. We're pretty hard on ourselves. So just remembering to take care of yourself, accept that the struggle is normal, and accepting yourself for who you are, where you are in the moment, and seeing if by using some of these tools, it can't help us to notice the here and now and be more present in our lives.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, that was good. Two things with that. First, a confession. I wanted to take the church to counseling this morning. And we did that. And we did that. Because we need that. All of us. All of us need to sit and listen and learn how to best be present. Second, a thing that hit me then when you're going through those, Alyssa, one of the things, a practice that I do, I didn't have a name for it. I think I call it the dump and get rid of. So what I always do is I'll put my hands out and I'll sit, and it's the image thing, and when the brain is spiraling and when it's just endlessly stays on the stuck. So then I'm like, and I need to focus. I will stop and I will just mentally picture those things jumping out of my mind, and I want to catch them in my hand. And when I do that, I catch them and then I do this. And I'll dump them. But then I'll turn my hands around, usually sitting, and put them on my knee, and I say, now, God, my hands are open. So, container, oh, that's beautiful. I like that image, and I like being able to say, it's not bad, we just need to put it away for another time, not right now, thank you very much. What a gift. Oh, I bless God. You can make your check out to Alyssa. She did. Oh, that's so good. Oh, okay. I'd love to lead us in a word of prayer, and then we'll reflect for a moment through song, which is another phenomenal practice, before we wrap up. Gracious God, you are here. I bless you, God, for meeting us right where we are in all of who we are. I bless you, God, for breathing into us your goodness, your grace, your mercy, your kindness, your correction when we need it. God, that you meet us where we are and you are constantly helping us take that next right step. And God, I bless you because sometimes the next right step is actually just standing still and being here, present with you. I bless you, God, for just loving each one of us so passionately as we need it. May we continue to create space, to pause, to settle down, to sit with you. That we might hear afresh, anew, all that you are inviting us into, who you are shaping us to be, so that we can be good news in this world because you are making us new all the time. What a gift, God. I bless you for that. I pray that for each one here. in the name of Christ. Amen.